to another episode of Wish I Knew, a podcast where I speak with people about their careers, focusing on their success, advice, mentoring, and listening to their really interesting stories. I'm your host, Gary Nowak, and I know when a guest comes on and doesn't feel like they have anything to share, will be off the charts great. And my conversation today with Anne Claude Tessier was absolutely no exception. Her career story is outstanding. Loved every minute of it. A bit about her background. Successful partner with KPMG for over 21 years. She was a group controller for Salins and business analyst, where she got a lot of overseas experience. Some highlights from our conversation: moving around 10 times prior to the age of 20, all within France. Saw the world early and often. Paris at 7 a.m. is magic. The freedom of being a consultant. You could take a 10 euro taxi ride home. I mean, come on. No clue on what to do with her career. That changed very quickly for her. Learning something is a great day, falling in love with Japan and learning yet another language, traveling to China and Russia with her financial reporting floppy disks in her backpack, bringing value at an early age and being very eager, working in the salt mines, being told how to make more money while in South Korea, not knowing what consulting was all about, and starting with KPMG at the very beginning of their management consulting practice. Many, many, many small pride moments for her. And finally, talking about being a lifelong learner. Okay, enough from me. Let me get out of your way so you can sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Anne Claude Tessier. Anne Claude, this has been a long time in the making, being able to record with you. Thank you so very much for jumping on this podcast with me.
I'm happy to be here.
And to make you feel more comfortable, because I know English is your second language, what I've been doing is brushing up on my French. So if it's okay for you, why don't we record this in French and I can translate later. Is that okay?
Absolument.
Well,
I can practice in English.
Anybody that knows me knows that I'm a big liar and I always go for the laughs right at the beginning. Thank you very much. First question is, what was your very, very, very first job?
The first job I had was when I was in my business school and I wanted to earn money during the Christmas holidays. So I went to this chocolate shop. And we were two or three students in the cellar of the shop packing chocolate boxes for Christmas. And I did that for 2 weeks.
So how many of those chocolates didn't make it into the box, but made it into your mouth instead? Because maybe they were damaged.
Actually, this is what the owner of the shop told us on the very first day. He said, you know what? Eat as many chocolates as you want and you'll see. So for the first day, I think I ate like 10. And then I didn't eat any chocolate for the rest of the Christmas break because packing chocolates all day and having eaten too much on the first day, he knew definitely what was going to happen.
I like that, but only 10? I would have had like 100.
Oh, you don't want to eat 100 chocolates when you're packing them for 10 hours a day.
And how old were you?
I was like 21.
21, and it was only, and that was your very first job. So in your teens. And you grew up?
I grew up in France, but I grew up in several places in France because my father was a colonel in Radio Corps, a military officer. So we moved to every two or three years, we would move to another city. So I think by the time I was 20, I must have moved 10 or 12 times. But mostly I grew up in the northeast part of France.
How difficult was that to keep moving every two or three years?
It was not so easy for school, for friends, no Instagram at the time to post whatever. But at the same time, I think it develops your adaptation skills.
Yeah. Do you think that helped you in your successful career?
At some point, yes, I definitely think it did. Because as soon as I was an adult, I wanted to move. So I was like, it must have influenced me in a way. Because yeah, I was a young adult. I wanted to move then to the US, to the UK. I went to Germany, I went to the US, to the UK, went to Japan, to South Korea. Yeah, moving and seeing something different. Probably I got it from there.
I think one of the two things happens to people when they move around a lot. They don't want to move anymore. They just want to grow roots. For you, it was just the opposite. It really fit. You said, oh, this is a big world out there. And you loved it. But when you were with your family, it was all within France.
Yes. always friends.
Okay, interesting. And where are you now?
So right now I'm in the far suburbs of Paris. I've been in Paris for the last 22 years, and I'm very lucky to be able not to live in a house in the far suburbs of Paris. We are like 30 kilometers away from downtown Paris, and I've got birds, I've got cats coming. I even have little deers crossing the garden from the wood nearby. That's just lovely.
You are painting the picture that I think every American is. Okay, if you're in the south of France, but you're in France and you have nature around you. Paris, I have to tell you, it could be my favorite city of all the places that I've been because it's so iconic. I find the transportation outstanding, the subway system, the landmarks that are there. And I do find the service and the people just to be awesome. I know Americans will come there, and I've seen the American go in there and give Paris or France a bad rap about service and everything else. It couldn't be further from the truth, because you have to adapt to the style of the city. The city doesn't have to adapt to the style of the individual coming in. Anyway, I don't want to make this a podcast about how great I think Paris is, but how often do you get into downtown and go see the sights?
I would do that every time I've got a client, and most of our clients are downtown. Typically yesterday, I had to be downtown Paris, Place Vendôme. This is where all the jewelry great shops are, and I had to be there at 7:30 in the morning. So I woke up super early, but then I got there and I took the liberty to walk. And I was in the Parc des Tuileries, close to the Louvre at 7 a.m. in Paris. No cars yet. That was magic. So I tried to do that, and regularly, and two or three times a year, we will go to the theater or the opera, make sure that we don't, just end up in our garden with the cats, the dogs, and the deers.
Isn't that the best job about consulting? Is it pushes these barriers or boundaries that people normally have. Like, no, I get into the office at 8 o'clock. I think the beauty of consulting is you wouldn't normally be downtown Paris at 7 a.m. unless you had a client obligation. And as we do, we acclimate to the client you're in. Of course, I'll be there. And then you find this beautiful time where nobody's around and it's silence. And you're just like, huh, there's a lot of pressure on being a consultant. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But boy, there are those moments where you sit back and you just have time with yourself, because we rush around and you're like, huh, this is pretty okay. This is great.
Exactly. To me, that's what comes with, for sure, pressure, and probably we'll indeed discuss it. But there's so much freedom in this work, and areas of freedom that you did not know could exist or that you could have. And to me, this is also the why I've been a consultant now for 20 years, even though I didn't start as a consultant. Because the freedom to organize your time, to set your priorities, exactly what you said, I want to walk in Paris at 7, I can. I want to do something in the afternoon and finish what I have to do in the weekend because it suits me better, I can. And that freedom of time, you don't have that in a lot of positions.
That's a great point. And I want to bring back a previous podcast guest, Rick Berthod, is podcast number 23. He said, That's what you get with consulting, is you get that Wednesday afternoon when you can take off at noon and go see your family and your child's in a play, or there's something that you want to do, or you want to walk around, and you can make up the time because we're not restricted in 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And it took me, I don't even know that I figured it out, the longest time to realize that I don't have to be chained to the desk. And people don't have to see me, as long as you get your stuff done, because we're measured not on input, but on output of, did we sign the contract? Are our metrics good? Is our team being utilized? There's all kinds of, I don't want to drain the podcast about consulting, but that's a great point about consulting, is you have freedom of time and you can plan however you want that meets the obligations of your job.
Yes, and it took me a little time to realize it and to authorize me to use that freedom. I remember I just had a memory of I was a young manager and I was leaving a client at some in the middle of the afternoon, and I rushed into the subway, worried that I would be late for something. And my boss at the time he was on the phone. So why are you rushing into the subway? Take a taxi, go home and finish home. And I was like, can I take a taxi? He was like, it's going to be 10 euros. Come on, who cares? Go home, finish your stuff, and everything will be fine. And it was in the very beginning of my consulting years, just after a work in the industry where they do you not 9 to 5, but 9 to 7 or 9 to 8, but still attached to your desk. And it was a revelation at the time. Oh my God, I can take a taxi and go home and finish later.
And it was easy as that one conversation, do you think?
No, it took me more than that.
I was going to say, it doesn't just happen in one conversation, but there's just this reinforcement.
Yes.
You mentioned something. You said you didn't start off in consulting. So take me back to, you know, when you first were at the chocolate factory, you're popping bonbons in your mouth incessantly. And what did you want to focus on when you were going to school or when you were in high school or college?
I had no idea what I wanted to do. So no career path, no clear vision of what I wanted to do. I studied math at a high school because this is what good kids were doing in France in my generation. If you were a good kid, you had to specialize in science, although I hated that. So just after my high school science, I went to a university to study foreign languages, English and German and economics. And after 3 years and a year I spent in Great Britain, so after 3 years of that, I had a licence in French. So that's a 3-year degree. I was like, okay, now I can speak English and German and understand economics, but I've got nothing to say in content. So now I need content. So I was like, okay, you've got basics in math, you can speak languages, so go to a business school. So this is how I landed to business school.
Hold on. I think you're being a little hard on yourself. You're learning 2 foreign languages, difficult, as Americans, we're always enamored. I am with people that can speak more than one languages because we can barely speak one. And now you're a little rough on yourself, like I have nothing to say. Come on. And you're very young at this point in time. Have you always been driven? Where's that drive come from? Or that common sense?
A drive from learning. Learning is definitely a driver still now. It's a successful day if I have learned something new. So whatever it is, even 2 days ago, I managed to park my husband's car in a very difficult spot. And I was like, I learned something today. I was happy.
The little things. Where does that drive? Is it from your family, from your parents, to the drive? Or
My mother is a teacher. So probably, and my grandmother is a teacher. Probably, yes, it's another genetic family history kicking in.
So you're learning German, you're learning English, you're learning econ, and you say to yourself, I have nothing to say. Now I got to go get content.
Exactly. So then I went to 3 years of business school. So learning marketing, accounting, international trade, what you learn in a business school. Definitely the languages I had in my university years were definitely helped. This is where on the first year I had my chocolate job for history. Then 6 months, 6 months in the US in Buffalo, New York at Canisius College.
What month were you there?
I was there 6 months, January to June.
Ooh, good for you.
And I loved it. I loved it. And I loved the winter there. I actually.
What did you love about it? It had to be the snow.
The snow, the blizzard, frozen Niagara Falls. At night, we had friends who had cars and we would drive there in the middle of the night in the weekend. Listen to the wilderness of the falls. Lake Erie was frozen for 3 months. I just loved it.
You've seen Niagara Falls, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And did you go to the Canada side to see it? That's the better side to see it.
No, I did not at the time.
You could lie. If you want to lie.
I never lie. I never lie. That's something about me.
we can change history. So you never lie as a consultant. That's why you're a good consultant, because you probably... And sorry, why were you in Buffalo for 6 months?
It was internships and exchange programs that the university had. So we had the choice with one university in close to Atlanta or Buffalo, New York. And remember, I said I grew up in the northeast of France. This is where we have the strongest winters, the snow. We don't have blizzard. We don't have freezing lakes, but definitely that's what is, you know, the closest to a cold climate.
You knew how to adapt. You knew what clothes to wear and you prepared yourself. Did they just love having you there with the accent and being French?
Yes, it's easy. Honestly, it's easy to be a French person abroad. Everybody is so nice to you just because you're French. So it's very unfair to the other nationalities. It's very easy to be French abroad.
And you can't hide it because the accent is just so, it's so identifiable. There is no mixing up, right? Like Italian, okay, a strong Italian, it's probably similar, but you can mix that up with maybe Spanish or something, but the French accent, because it's just so smooth. There's no, Italian is very accent, hard, ups and downs. You're just like smooth, easy as it goes. And, you know, I could tell you, well, you know, you just walk in and start talking and everything just falls in the right way for you, I would imagine, right? That's all you have to do is talk and you win the jobs, you sell the projects, everybody just falls in love.
I love, and it's in this business school, the second year, I went to Germany for 3 months. And something that happened on the last year, which was, I think, really critical for my future career, is I had the same kind of internship or a scholarship to go 3 months to Japan. And I had taken Japanese classes in that business school, because I already had English and German and they offered Japanese. I said, let's try Japanese. And I really fell in love with the country and with the language. So my last year, I had this internship in a Japanese company in Kobe, and we were 4 French people. And I was, that was actually my third job before my professional life. I was selling jewelry and pearls in a jewelry factory in Kobe in Japan.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a first. Hold on, let me check my notes. Yep, you're the first person that was French that was in Japan selling jewelry. Interesting, in Kobe, Japan. You've had the beef, I'm assuming.
Yes.
It's pretty darn good.
It's amazing.
Here's a story. I need to do a podcast on beef because I talk about it so darn much. So I'm catching, you spent a life all throughout France. Is there a big difference in locations in France that stand out? Like, oh, south of France is like this versus north is like that. Or is it just very homogenous? Everybody's French, or are there very distinct areas?
No. Very distinctive. Not the same accent. Really different accent. If you put somebody from the south and somebody from the north, sometimes it's hard for them to understand one another.
Because they're influenced by the border countries as well.
Yes, the food is different. The accent is different. I'll send you a map that we have where you've got France in the eyes of a Parisian, and you've got like the lazy tourist who just go to the beach and do nothing. The people who keep drinking because there's nothing else to do. And the one who are obsessed with food. And I'll send you that one.
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes because I want to see it and I know everybody else will. I've got you going all over France every 2 to 3 years. Hard to stay in contact with people, hard to keep friends and all that. You know, the irony is I didn't move around at all, yet I had no friends growing up in elementary school. So it's very ironic. I'm sure you had friends and still moved around. Then you go to the UK, I think I caught. Then you go to the US, you're in Germany and Japan. Okay, and all this is very young, below 25.
Yeah, at 23, yes, all that
before 20. So this traveler in you is built in your DNA. And it was only 3 months in Japan.
Yes. And then so this is when then I looked for a job.
Where?
So I was looking in France. I was looking for something in international trade or import export. Bad timing, because it was 93, 94, where we had a major economic crisis in France. So finding a job as a young graduate was not easy. So it took me several months before I found something. During that, I took English classes, literature. I was like, okay, let's learn something while I'm still looking for a job, not waste my time. But this is when I fell in love with English literature and Shakespeare. And finally, I get this job as a young financial analyst, business analyst, and it was in the city of Lyon in France. And I stayed there for 5 years. And this is also the company that gave me the opportunity to go to Japan. And this is where the Japanese story makes sense. They had a subsidiary in Tokyo. And after 2-3 years that I was there, they said, okay, we will need somebody to go to Japan. We've got a new subsidiary there. We need to do some process map and understand the economic flows, and so I was like, I want to go. And and then I went, and I ended up being this international business controller in charge of the Asian subsidiaries. So I would travel all the time going. I went to China, I went to Hong Kong in 96 when it was still
British ruled.
I went to Shanghai in 95 when nothing was built yet. And I went for 2 years. I went 5 or 6 times to Japan every year. And then I stayed 1 year in South Korea when we set up the new subsidiary.
Wowzers. This is young.
It's 25, 28, yes.
Did you realize at the time this is something special?
I realized it when, for example, I went to China or I went to Russia as well. And I was like 27 with my backpack and we had floppy disk at the time to bring back the reporting figures. So I went this young girl with my backpack and my reporting floppy disks. And I was surrounded by 50 white males in the airport who were like, are you the daughter of somebody? And I was like, no, I'm going to collect the reporting data in the Chinese subsidiary.
I put this podcast out because I want young people to know that it's okay in their 20s to maybe not find your path or you're struggling. This is blowing it out of the water because you haven't even hit 30 yet. You've been to, I'm counting 8 countries, maybe, including France. I'm counting communist countries, British ruled Hong Kong. You're in Russia. You've got a backpack. You look young now. I'm sure back then you looked
like a baby.
Like you were 14. Yeah. What's this 14-year-old dude telling me what to do about my financials and my P&L isn't what it's supposed to be. And these metrics are not good. And when you reflect back on that now, what are your thoughts?
It was both reckless, but not that much. It was both secure and reckless. So I was not really comfortable in China. Was really complicated because I could not speak the language. Well, Russia was weird because I definitely could not speak the language. Otherwise, I also went to Mexico, by the way, in the plants on the northern of Mexico. So, but Japan, I could speak a little. I could not read a lot, but I could communicate. And all the rest I could manage, whether it was in German, English, Spanish, or a bit of Japanese. So that's okay. It was not that complicated.
One of my fun stuff questions is how many languages do you speak? So we're going to save that for later. And I'm guessing it's a lot. It's more than the -1 that most Americans speak. So when you look back, you thought it was reckless and safe at the same time. What, because you had indicated it took you a while to find a job. Like 5 months, it was a crisis. And you get this, from what I'm understanding, is a great international job for you. What did people see in you? Or were there mentors that looked at you and said, yes, we're comfortable sending you over to these countries to go figure it out?
That's a very good point. I had in this company, I had 3 very good mentors. I had my direct boss who could see that as soon as I was traveling or doing something new or discovering new stuff, like I was so happy. So he made sure that I had this happiness moments between months of budget and closing and reporting. And I had 2 great leaders, the head of Asia and the CEO of Japan and South Korea at the time, who were like French guys, one close to retirement, the other one a bit younger. And so happy to take me, to push me, to invite me, to propose to me to go somewhere else, and definitely great riddles and role models and mentors.
What do you think they saw in you? Why did they want to do that for you?
I don't know, this eagerness to learn and deliver into fun. And also I was bringing value because maybe they didn't have a lot of people who were ready to do that at the time. So I was both helping and I was so happy to do that.
It had to come out in spades. So I'm going to turn that around a bit. You're in consulting. You've been in there for 20 years. When you see a young person that does a great job. What do you see in them where you want to support them and reach out to them and mentor them and want them to be successful in their career?
I do that now, actually. I'm a mentor of 4 people right now. And actually, yes, I see in them what I was when I was young. I see young, bright people eager to learn. So I'm trying to help them to unleash their potential, to be confident in their skills, to be confident that if they make mistakes, it's okay. And that making mistakes is also a way to learn. And in the end, you're still better than you were before. So
what stands out in them that separate? Because not every young person going through it that you can see people that you really want to spend time with. And there's others that, of course, you'll spend time, but you know, boy, they're missing some skills. So what is it about these 4 mentees that you're looking at that you really want to improve things for them?
I think they share the purpose of trying to make something better than what existed before they helped. As a consultant, they're definitely driven by the thrill to help, to facilitate, to make something easier, something did not work and now it works, something was slow and now it's faster, something was taking weekends and now you can end your week in a Friday evening. And they have that purpose of trying to do something concrete and to go to the better. And they're trying to do that with passion.
You see that in them.
Yes, definitely.
And that's what these gentlemen in South Korea, the head of Asia, when you went over there, they probably saw exactly that in you.
Probably.
Run into your other parent, because you said something that I truly believe in is we hire in our mold. We hire people that we can, that look like us or that act like us. And once younger people figure that out, that even if your boss is in their 30s or something, if you're more like them, it's not to mimic them or try to be something you're not. Of course, you never want to advocate that, but it's when there's that synchronicity with people and they can see it. And that's why they go out of their way, because they see themselves in you and they want what's best for you, for them, because that was you X years ago. So I'm catching, you're flying all over the world. You're French, so it's a smooth path wherever you go, just because your accent, which is easy. And then you only had that job for 5 years, you said. You've done all this within that 5-year time frame.
And then I come back from South Korea, where I stayed a year. I'm back in Lyon, and there it's 98. It's an economic crisis again for the next 30 years. And I was supposed to have potentially a job in Australia, actually, where they wanted to set up a subsidiary, and all the expat jobs are killed for a while. So I'm back in Lyon in an open space, and we start an SAP implementation program. And going back to freedom, after all these 2 or 3 years of traveling everywhere, even though I was regularly, of course, coming back to Lyon where I lived, yeah, I was like in a prison, open space, SAP, Lyon. I was like, not possible. No way. Not after what I lived. So this is when I decided to look for another company, another job. And this is where I ended up in Paris as a financial controller for a salt company.
What company?
Salt, S-A-L-T, salt.
Okay, salt. Opposite of pepper, okay.
And that company, it's the French company selling salt, and not just selling, producing. So there's a salt mine in northeast France, and you've got the salt marshes in Camargue, in the south of France, with the Pink Floyds and all that.
Yeah, of course we all know that, yeah. Common knowledge.
And then again, definitely the CEO of that company, definitely role model, mentor. Yes, so charismatic, so bright. And I'm 28 at the time, and doing the link with the headquarters and the subsidiaries with the salt marshes and the Pink Floyds and the mine and our subsidiaries in Italy and Spain. And then this company is purchased by, has an LBO with 2 different PE private equity funds. And as a financial controller, my life really starts to be a nightmare. You know, I'm doing forecast and budget like every half an hour because they want to look at stuff differently. And then again, the freedom starts to be an issue. And this is when really by chance I'm talking to people and like, okay, I don't see myself staying there too long. And people who knew people who knew people knew that there was a consulting practice starting at KPMG in Paris. And this is how I started.
Wow.
20 years ago.
Great. And you haven't even hit. How long were you at this salt mine?
2 years.
Yeah. So you're 30.
Yeah.
You've done all that in your 30s. What was the best part about all that travel? Or do you have a favorite location or favorite story out of all those places?
Japan is really my favorite. I really fell in love with Japan.
Why?
Exactly what you said about Paris. It's what I feel about Tokyo. It's smooth. It's clean. It's easy. It's a mixture of history and modernity. There's beauty all over the place. And the people are so nice. People are super nice. And they love the French. So again, I know I was, you know, lucky that I was French.
Because everywhere you go, you get the red carpet rolled out for you.
Yes.
I know that.
That's really unfair to the others.
What? I normally save this question at the end, and I hope it's okay that I ask, but what was it like being a woman in the 90s with your position, looking like you're 14 years old and doing heavy duty stuff?
So that was fun and not so much fun. In Japan, for example, I would attend a meeting with the CFO, the CEO of the company, and then they had Japanese auditors or consultants, and nobody's looking at me. Probably they expect that I bring the coffee or whatever. And then somebody mentions, oh, and this is Anne from France. She's coming from headquarters and she's doing some controlling review. And then suddenly I've got five Japanese men who did not even look at me since the beginning of the meeting. Then they stand up and they hand their name cards and they say hello and so on. And it was like funny because like for 1 hour, I did not even exist. So that was Japan in the 90s. In South Korea, it was a bit harder because the culture was a bit more aggressive. And I even had, maybe you have to censor that in your cast, I don't know. But I had one client who was, he was a retailer, and he proposed to me that I could be like an escort girl for him because I would make so much more money than just being a financial controller. And he said, why are you wasting your time doing financial analysis? You could make so much more being a French woman as an escort girl in Seoul. Like, no, thank you.
You know, I don't edit anything, so everything's got to stay. Either I use everything or I don't use everything. That's going to stay, of course. That's, boy. And if I think of the 90s, Japan was on top of the world. They were number two by far, easy to the US. And with the automobile industry, with their methodology, with Six Sigma and Lean, boy, that country was just really, really on top of it at that time. So you were there at the height of almost every, there were the 93 and the 98 downturns in France. Being in Japan at that time, South Korea.
Yeah, South Korea, I was there when we had the international crisis in 98, when everything collapsed. And so they would cut the electricity, for example, in the streets at 8 p.m. or the elevators were only stopping every two other floors to save energy. Yeah, they would cut the airco and the heating at 5 p.m. Yeah, that was fun year in South Korea.
Wow. Did you ever go to the DMZ?
Yes, I went there. Very impressive and emotional.
Interesting, right?
Yes, super, super impressive.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so all paths have led to you with KPMG that was just starting out with their consulting practice, you had said, in Paris.
Yes, yes.
You had made an inference of you knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody. Is there anything in that process? Did you really reach out to people and say, hey, I'm looking, what is there? And then eventually somebody came up and said, hey, I bet you might like this consulting gig at KPMG.
It's exactly that. I said, I did not even know what consulting could be like. So I had seen a few consultants in my previous career, but it was more like, I want something new. This is what I can do. Do you know somebody who's looking for, and I was looking as a financial controller at the time. And then this is how it started. And at the beginning, I did not even know what consulting would be about. I was like super scared to go and see clients. And I was so amazed at the beginning that people would be ready to pay for me for a day of work. I was like, they're going to pay that much money for me for 8 hours? No, that's not possible.
That's interesting. And it's fit. consulting is you, because you haven't left.
And yes, I found what I needed finally, because yeah, it's been 22 years now at KPMG.
Any mentors at KPMG that have been influential with you in your career?
Yes, definitely. I always lucky enough to find a mentor everywhere I go. So the partner of the practice, definitely, who hired me, who explained to me, he really managed to give trust in the abilities and the skills that I had, and to teach me all the rest about consulting, about client relationship, about how different it is to do a project when you're in the company versus leading a project when you're a consultant. And definitely lucky again to have got somebody showing the way.
What's the biggest difference between inside the company, like you were for so many years, probably about 7 years, versus a consultant?
At some point, and it's maybe contradictory, I think I go back again to this word of freedom, but you have more freedom to shape, to say, to propose. Then, of course, in the end, the client decides what they want to do with your recommendation, but you can speak up, analyze, take your time, and really bring your convictions and your convictions of what you have seen with other clients and the conviction that you have shared with your peers in the KPMG network, versus sometimes within the company itself, there's also so much politics going on that sometimes it's easier to speak up as an external person than compared to an internal individual.
I've always found it interesting how much clients are willing to share with you as a consultant. And I sit in meetings and look at them like, really, you're sharing this with me? And of course, you sit and listen. And I'm sure you've seen it based on the smile and the nodding of, we just come in. And the word trusted advisor gets thrown around quite a bit. When I talk to you and just listening to your story, you feel like a trusted advisor of somebody that has the best interests of the client front and center. But do you find that as well, that clients will share things with you that you're amazed that they're sharing with you?
Yes, I see also that as a sign of trust, and also that it's also my duty, even more my duty, to help them the best I can, because if they're sharing this with me, means maybe they don't have a lot of people they can share it with. It makes the responsibility even bigger.
How do you build trust with clients?
I prepare a lot. I never come unprepared. And even if it's an introductory meeting, I will read what is happening to the company. I will ask for material. I will ask other people who know whatever happens. So I really prepare a lot before I go. I listen a lot. I've got strong opinions that I can share, but I'm also okay to change them if I've got new information that I didn't have. And I said that earlier, I'm incapable of lying. So when I don't know, I say that I don't know, and I come back later with the answer or somebody who can help.
It's funny because I interviewed your husband prior to this podcast, and Claude, she's white lies every once in a while. Not big lies, but white lies. I might take you to task on that, but it's another story. I like that, because I think that's a true blue consultant, is building trust. You come prepared. You read everything. You talk to people within the organization. You get more information. And then what you said that really stood out is you listen, and you didn't say, I listen. You said, I listen a lot, which is the most valuable thing that I think we have as human beings and as a good consultant, because people have so much to say. And I find even if you just sit there and listen intently, the level of trust keeps going up. Because you're not trying to, because as a consultant, we have to balance our, hey, we're the expert, we know everything, so we want to tell you, versus we should listen and ask more questions, because they go hand in hand. If you listen and ask the right questions, then you will come with the solutions that fit their need. It's not rocket science. And you managed to do that very early in your career, I would imagine, by preparing. All of those traits you probably had when you were 23 or eating bonbons. It's always coming back to that. That's why I asked that question. Because while you're sticking chocolate in your mouth, you're probably being very prepared. You're learning.
I'm learning how to box my chocolates in the right manner. Yes.
It's important. I don't know if there was a question in there, but And here's maybe a question. Has there been any advice that you've been given that has stuck with you?
Well, it's something that, yes, and it's actually something I keep as well with my teams now, is let's do what we think is right. So it's a lot about values and conviction. And to do what is right, indeed, before that, you need to have a lot of preparation of the facts and the analysis. And don't do anything I wouldn't do. Don't do anything that you could regret or not be happy or not sleep well over of any recommendation or decision you made. Yes.
What are you most proud of in your career?
I thought about that one. There's no major moment that I'm proud of, but I've got a lot of small pride moments or happiness moments or rewards. Whether it's a project go live that goes well, it's a team that you see grow up. Like a month ago, I had a young senior consultant. We are in a technology project and she's the only one who's really doing the detailed stuff in the tool. And she found a way that could really save tons of work for the client. And she's the one who found it. And I was so proud of her. I was like, that's my girl. This is my team. She was great. She found it. She analyzed it. She prepared it. She brought it to the client. And she found the way that saved tons of hours. And I was super, super proud. On the mentoring side, I thought as well about that one. I've got this young senior manager. She told me 2 weeks ago, we discussed 1 hour with you and I feel like a mushroom after the rain. And I was like, okay, that's the best HR reward you could have. That your mentee is telling you that they feel like a mushroom after the rain is really okay.
So I'm not as familiar with that analogy, but based on your happiness, that they've grown quite a bit.
They've grown, yeah. They've flourished or I don't know.
Flourished. Perfect. Yeah. Because sometimes mushrooms get caught in the bad stuff for a while and they get caught in the dark. So I wanted to make sure that I caught that right.
Country mushroom. Not cellar mushroom.
Yeah, of course not. That would just be terrible. I've noticed a few in those examples, a few she's in the example. I would imagine you're a massive role model for a lot of people within KPMG in Paris.
I'm not sure of that one, honestly.
It really wasn't a question. It felt like more like a statement. Just based on everything I'm hearing, I'm sure you have a gravitational pull to having good people with you, or you have a real good assessment of who's going to be on your team and who's not, and how to maybe set the tone of the project.
Yes. And I've got guys as well, not just girls in my teams.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. You don't discriminate.
Not at all. No.
Okay. Final kind of maybe heavier question before we get into the fun stuff. What has been your best career decision to date? And I've got many inflection points in your career, but what do you think was your best decision from a career perspective?
Asking to go to Japan in that very first company, because that was really a triggering point, because that led to South Korea. And then I really learned, we say in French, you learn life, because it's not an easy journey. So when you come back, you're definitely stronger.
How do you say that in French?
Apprendre la vie.
That's what I thought. Yep, I was just confirming my knowledge. Thanks.
So that one was definitely a critical decision point. When I decided to leave that company, saying I need more freedom, I need more reward, and that was a move. And definitely, yes, coming to consulting, that was the best move, because after 22 years, this is where I am still today, and I love it.
Do you have a favorite consulting project that just was memorable for one reason or another? Nothing stands out.
No, nothing stood out.
It's been 20 some odd years of just greatness, which is
not greatness. No, not always.
The right answer though, because you love it. Consulting is you.
I will put passion, motivation, energy in each project, whether it's a 1 month project, whether it's a 1 year project, whether it's purely French, whether it's international. I will put all the time the same energy, the same passion, the same ambition to make it better, to make it work. So I thought about that one. Nothing came on top of the others.
So you prepared for this?
A little bit, yes. Not enough to my taste.
I feel so guilty because I don't even know that I prepare for these things. But yeah, you're showing me up. Okay, I would normally say, do you have time for fun stuff questions? But this has all been fun stuff up until now. So do you have time for silly questions? How's that?
Sure, always for you.
What is your favorite movie or book?
Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. I need to.
At you. Connecting America and New Zealand in one fell swoop. And there's one's a trilogy. I think Lord of the Rings is a trilogy and Star Wars has 9 movies. Do you like all 9 movies for Star Wars?
No, the old ones.
Okay, the Star Wars and maybe the first 3, which is 4, 5, and 6. Okay. Favorite meal? Oh, this is a good one for you.
Favorite meal? I did not prepare that one. I pass.
You are true to your word.
Let's kill that one.
You're French. I figured that would be like a layup.
Exactly. Oh. There's so many. And Italy is so close. So no, I cannot answer that question in less than 2 hours.
Favorite vacation spot?
Iceland.
With Reykjavik?
Right. Beyond that. We went 3 times to Iceland for summer vacation.
What do you like about it?
Oh, the beauty of the landscape. People are so nice. There are not a lot of people. They have more sheep than people. The wilderness. Yeah, the wilderness of the landscapes, the volcanoes, the glacier, the wind. It's amazing.
It's on my list. I think I'm going to go there in 2023. Any music concert artist, dead or alive, who would you want to
see? That one I prepared. Pavarotti is really so... I would have so loved to be able to hear Pavarotti in real life.
And what part of his career? Or would there be a certain opera you'd want to see or a venue you want to see him at? Guy was magnetic.
Verdi, La Traviata, and some Puccinis, definitely.
Love it. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
I actually wanted to marry a cowboy so I could have cattle, sheep, cows, dogs, horses. And I thought it would only happen in America. So this is what I wanted to be.
That's the exact opposite of your life. You got grounded on a job, but coming back from all these places, you're like, I got to get out of here. This stinks. Can you imagine being on a farm and never leaving because there's so many animals that rely on you?
Yeah, but...
Good thing that dream wasn't answered. I can tell you that. All right, some rapidy fire questions. Go to fast food restaurant.
Not at all.
Okay, nothing.
Nothing.
What's your favorite type of pizza?
Calzone.
Oh, and what's it stuffed with?
Spinach.
Ugh, it's not the right answer. Do you have a favorite TV show?
Friends.
You like that?
It makes me laugh even 20 years after I saw the first one, so yes.
See, this is why, because you put so much energy into work, you need something bubblegummy. Like popcornish that you don't have to think about. There's these 6 friends that go around and say hello to each other and do stuff. So you check out during, okay, because that show's not very good. What's your favorite podcast?
Yours.
That's right. That's the right answer. One for the good guy. What's your favorite type of food? I know this answer.
So Japanese and Italian.
Okay. I knew Japanese would come up. Are you a karaoke singer?
Not at all.
Do you want to think about it? Are you sure?
Definitely, yes, I'm sure.
I sense some hesitation. What is your go-to alcoholic beverage?
Burgundy wine.
If it were anything other than wine, I would call foul on this podcast. Burgundy wine. Okay. And is it true the French drink wine all the time, like at lunch, and it's no big deal?
No, it's not true.
No. So business lunches, you're having sparkling and...
Yeah, and this is what we had 20 years ago, yes, but not anymore.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. Are you a morning or an evening person?
Definitely not morning, for sure. Evening person, yes.
That was a process of elimination question. What was your very first car?
A Burgundy Clio, Renault Clio, a small car.
It had to be a French car. Mm. Do you have a dream car?
Coupe Bentley.
Big car. What color? What color was your first car? Sorry.
Burgundy, deep purple.
Sorry, you said that. And the Bentley, would that be burgundy as well? Or you want it?
No, it would be dark blue or dark gray.
Yeah. Big car.
Yeah.
How many languages do you speak? that you're comfortable in?
So French, English, that's okay. German, I can manage pretty well. Spanish and Japanese, I can have limited conversations. And I forgot all my Korean.
You knew Korean?
I learned Korean. I stayed 1 year. I learned Korean, but I forgot.
Wowzers. Any broken bones?
No.
No, oh, good for you. Any tattoos?
No.
Are tattoos a big thing in France?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Do you have a celebrity crush?
Sean Connery.
How can you not? Even I do on that guy. Man, he's a man's man. Like, and the accent, he's Scottish, like, oh, James Bond. Are you a salty or a sweet snack person?
Salty.
Yeah, that's the right answer. Do you have a fantasy career? You'd be great at it, anything. Even if you're bad at it right now, you'd be great at whatever it is.
No, no fantasy career.
I think you're doing it. Do people say you look like anybody famous?
No, they don't.
Nobody. Okay.
No, I've never got that one.
Final couple of questions. Dinner with anybody dead or alive, who would it be?
Yep. Pass. Sorry. I needed to prepare more.
This isn't a game show and I'm not giving points, just so you know. Okay, final question. Hopefully you don't have to prepare for this one. How do you want to be remembered?
Somebody smart, kind, and funny.
Funny, huh? Well, you're making me laugh.
Smart and kind and dull is not an option.
That's why I wanted to have you on so desperately. We've only met a couple of times, but anytime we met, I don't know. I enjoy your company and I just think we'd laugh. And I've been laughing this whole podcast. So I can't thank you enough for your time and energy on this. I know you were very apprehensive and why am I going to do this? Hopefully you had a good time.
I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.